One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org. One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
With new McValue at McDonald's, you get more than you expect for breakfast. Like buy a sausage burrito and add a sausage McMuffin for a dollar. Get more than you expect with new McValue at McDonald's.
Prices and participation may vary. Valid for item of equal or lesser value.
It's all about the macro productions.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Well, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary is Tack Theratrix.
I am Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have
Afrodita!
I
have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the CS hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you're watching us on Rockfin or Rumble, or you're listening wherever podcasts are served, thanks a million. We appreciate the support. We're coming to you from the Las Vegas office, I think I'm calling it these days. If you want to connect with me, I'm still available. Macroaggressions.io is the best place to go to find out about the shows and the books and all that good stuff. The Octopus of Global Control is now available as an audiobook, and it has been selling very well. I'm very pleased with it. 23 hours of Graham Dunlop from Grimerica with that sweet, sweet Canadian accent in your ear hole. If you got a long road trip, you're going to the gym, you're gardening, you're doing something, I don't know, maybe consider checking it out at wherever audiobooks are available. They're available at Spotify now, too. So if you have one of those subscriptions where you can just, like, get a book every month or something, I don't know, consider, take a look, see what you think. It'll be worth your money. There we go, as Scott Armstrong reaches behind him to grab the Octopus of Global Control off of his bookshelf. We can't do this show without our amazing sponsors. We love them so much. They are ideologically aligned with us too, which helps a whole lot when you've got Chemical Free Body making fantastic supplements that work, that'll help your body, that help you physically recover from things. Tim James, the owner, saved his life with changing his diet. He was in bad shape, and he's devoted to helping people regain their health that we've lost in this very polluted world. There are forces acting against us every single day. If you're listening to this, you know that, and you have made a decision to sort of be aware of that. And in so doing, maybe you want to supplement your daily routine with Green 85. I do. I have done it every day for the last 4 years. It is pretty easy to do. Take a look. Go to chemicalfreebody.com. Read up about Green 85. It'll blow you away. It looks gross. It tastes a hell of a lot better. It's got raspberry flavoring in it. So just close your eyes when you drink it and it'll be fine. Chemicalfreebody.com, promo code macro. And also thanks to the folks at EMP Shield. Let's be proactive, shall we? I mean, it's probably just going to protect you against lightning strikes and the random solar flares, but if those lunatics decide to set off an EMP, and anything and everything is on the table, let's be honest here. Well, EMP Shield is building the best shielding device available. You should just go over there, read up about it, watch their installation videos. You can do it yourself if you want. It'll install to your house, to your car, so that you don't have to go buy like a 1977 Bronco so that it'll start after the apocalypse. You will be driving around in your Bentley with your EMP shield attached to it because you'll be the only car on the road. So it'd be easy traffic commute for you to through your dystopian hellscape after the EMP goes off. But EMP shield will protect you against it. So go to empshield.com, read up about it, use the promo code on your way out, macro. I'm just having some fun as we go running headfirst into this apocalypse. Well, I'll tell you what, nobody better I would want to be alongside me commenting on the unraveling of the American society. He is the host of Rebunked. He's got a shirt on that says Rebunked Records. Have you heard his music, everybody? Ladies and gentlemen, Scott Armstrong. Hello, Scott. Good to see you again.
What's up, Charlie, man? Yeah, I got the Blowback Gallery hat on, too.
Yeah.
Pueblo, so we got to kick it in Colorado recently. So.
Yes, we did.
Yeah, man, thank you for having me on, dude. I really, really appreciate it. You know, I know this is a crazy time, and just appreciate you taking the time to have me on, and we can just, you know. It's funny because, like, I love talking about this stuff, like all the horrors and the terror and all this stuff. It's like that anti-fragile mentality where it's like, mm-hmm. you know, we like, this is what we do. Like, this is where we're in our happy place. Well, I've even commented where it's like, you know, during the tyranny, the COVID tyranny, like I would have never been crushing harder. And, you know, like when the tyranny was at its maximum, I was like, also at my maximum, like, just, yeah, like, I look back on that, and that was, like, those are the best times of my life, like, 2020, 2021, and it's, like, I'm kind of at the point now where I'm just, like, can you guys do a little more tyranny? Like, I just miss those days, like, to a certain degree, I kind of miss it.
See, this is all about perspective. So yeah. You choose to have a bad attitude about life. See, Scott saw the COVID craptacular and chose to make it the best part of his life so far. You really have had a resurgence. Could you imagine just a couple of years ago if somebody magically teleported themselves in front of you and said, this is where you'll be in 2024. You'll be hosting a popular podcast. You'll be working with Unjected. You'll be working with T-Lav. You'll have a new album out. All this stuff. You would have thought it was a byproduct of whatever it was you were smoking.
Right? Exactly. Well, definitely, yeah. There was a time where I would have been very much attributing it to whatever it was I was smoking. But, yeah, man, like 2019, I was working an office job. Like, I was like a counselor. You know what I mean? Like, I had no – I was listening to your show. Like, you're one of the people that I looked up to the most. I was just talking to a friend earlier. I was like, yeah, I'm going on this show today with a guy who I read his books like way before COVID. Like, I was following you. And then I remember, like, early on, I was like, even before I started a podcast, I hit you up on Facebook. I said, hey, Charlie, when are you going to start a podcast? You're like, well, I got a surprise for you. And so, like, it's just like so trippy to like be in this whole milieu now. It's like really kind of crazy. But I didn't even start podcasting until June of 2020. Like, it was post COVID that we actually like opened our mouths for the first time. So,
and that was
like
Truthzilla for those
that
of
was
you
Truthzilla.
OGs to the Truthzilla. I consider Truthzilla to be your first album.
Exactly. Well, in a way, yes, that was my first public creative venture. You know, and I miss those days for sure. But you know, things evolve, things change. So it's just how it is.
Yeah.
So
and you've relocated. How much has that sort of played a role in this whole thing? I mean, just getting into a You know, because there's been a lot of that during COVID where people made some decisions and calculations about, is this going to be, is this a state or maybe a city within a state that projects well into the future? Or if I'm using my ability to, you know, to analyze the situation, am I making a calculation, kind of like what I did in 2015 in California, which was SB 277 comes into play. Mandatory vaccination for all children entering school. We're going to go the private school route anyway, but didn't matter. It was still for that. I said, well, I'm going to make this calculation now as my preschooler starts preschool for the first week, and let's get out of here.
Yeah.
And so we left after a week in school and relocated. So I wonder, I mean, when you made that decision to relocate, what was behind that?
Oh, my gosh. Well, you know, I'd lived in Oregon my whole life and born and raised there. And I consider myself a Pacific Northwestern Oregon boy, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. through and through. And all the things that come with that, like all the outdoorsy stuff and just like, you know. And I lived in Portland for about 10 years from 2004 to like 2012, so like whatever, 8 years. But, you know, I grew up outside of Portland, like an hour outside of like downtown Portland. And Portland used to be a really cool ass city, dude. Like from 2004 to like 2010, like that was like when the whole hipster movement was just first coming around, and it was like this trendy, fun little like weird ass place. And that, you know, it was awesome. It's a great city.
I got married there in 2005 at Edgefield at McMillan's.
Yeah.
That haunted hotel.
Yep, I've been there many times.
Had a Jerry Garcia bar that was off this. It was like a stone hut that was like the Jerry Garcia bar, and you go in there, and oh my god, we had like a getaway like wedding with a bunch of friends showing up, and we took over that hotel. Man, it was fucking amazing. It's super haunted too. One of the bridesmaids woke up in the middle of the night with something pulling on her foot. Jeez. And she, we're like, we saw it the next morning. We're like, where is she? And they're like, oh, she's staying at a hotel downtown now. She got in a cab at like 2 o'clock in the morning and switched hotels.
Damn, that's crazy. Yeah, no, I've heard rumors about that. I've never experienced any supernatural
things. I didn't have anything
things.
Happen to me, but
but I've been to Edgefield many times, so that's awesome, man. But yeah, Oregon just started declining. You know, like I'd say around 2016 is when like it really like the politicization of the whole, like, you know, like really when Trump came out, it was like the whole Pacific Northwest turned just rabidly like anti-Trump, whatever. You know what I mean? It was really divided along those lines, which is kind of silly looking back. But then also it just plunged the whole place into, you know, like the homelessness turned into a real situation, you know. And I can speak on that forever because, you know, that when I was saying I was working an office job, I was working as a counselor working with that population, essentially working with homeless drug addicts, like helping them get off of drugs, you know what I mean, this and that. But anyway, really, like, and then when 2020 happened, that's when it all came to a head, right? And so like 2020 itself was a very crazy year, you know, where there's a lot of places where, you know, were affected by COVID, or the lockdowns, I should say, but one degree to another. But Oregon in particular, it was really, I'll try and paint a picture of it for you. So it was like the lockdowns occurred, and I remember I was working as a counselor, and I remember my boss handing me like a note that I found it recently as I was moving, but it's basically like a letter that said I was an essential worker and that I'm allowed to travel. Basically, it was my travel papers to travel from my home to work in case it turned into like full martial law where they were locking down like military in the streets. Like, so that was looming on the corner or around the corner. We had outdoor mask mandates, right? So you'd go outside and I'd be the only person I'd see I wouldn't see a person's face for days. You know what I mean? Like everybody was in a mask. Of course, then the George Floyd situation happened when Portland was one of the epicenters of that. I was in Eugene about 2 hours south, but there was some rioting there. There was a lot of property damage in like a certain area on like 5th Street and like Van Buren, kind of that area. There was a bunch of buildings that got raided. But still there was like that kind of whole just public or like civil unrest like in the air, really. And but Portland was just going crazy. Like there was this guy, I can't remember his name, he was just like a Trump supporter. They like walked up and like shot him in the back of the head, like in the streets, like on camera, like got away with it, you know what I mean? Like they were executing people in the streets. We had the election coming up, so there's all this like intense insanity around that. And then the crazy part that really just magnified everything was the wildfires, right? So there's like you know, Northern California, Oregon are known for having like wildfires like right around this time of year, like August, you know, mid to late summer. So it was like summertime and all of this intensity was just ramping up, like just the divide around the mass and all this stuff. And the wildfires were so intense that, like, during the day, there was so much smoke in the air that the sky was like the sun shining through made everything red, like you were on Mars, right? And so we were like, we didn't know if there was like literally it felt like any day they could start rounding people up in boxcars that were like questioning the narrative, and like it was so insane. You know what I mean? And it felt like I was on some Martian planet. Like, it was all red. Everyone's in masks. Like, the intensity was just in the air. They were, like, doxing Republicans and all this stuff. And, like, I was like, that was when I first was like, okay, I got to get out of here. But then what happened was is I went the opposite direction. I'm like, I need to find the people around here that think the same way as me. And that's when we started the whole Freedom Cell thing. We got involved with the Freedom Cell movement with Derek Bros and John Bush and those guys that started that whole thing. Mm-hmm. We started our own little Freedom Cell. And out of that, I made so many cool connections and friends and everything, and that's really what sustained me, my time while I was there in Oregon. But, you know, so it was coming around 2022, so I withstood, you know, all of the really, like, I lost my job over the vaccine, that counseling job, like, they didn't want me around because I was mostly just making a stir. Like, it wasn't because, like, I was fired because I didn't take the vaccine. It was because I was being so vocal. Like, I was sending out agency-wide emails and all this stuff, and they found a sneaky little way to fire me. And it's a funny story, but anyway. But so at that point, like, I really wanted to leave. I felt like I wasn't thriving in Oregon. Like, all the businesses had shut down. Like, everybody was leaving. All my friends were leaving. They were going to, like, Texas and Florida, which I was looking at initially. But, you know, it's really interesting because all the things that were keeping me there in Oregon, all my attachments kind of fell away around the same time. Like, I ended up leaving Truthzilla. I was in a band out there. Shout out to Hot Piranha, who is on the album, track 4. You guys got to check that out, which I'm sure we'll get into. But, I left the band. Actually, I got voted out because – well, what happened was –
by Dave Grohl?
Exactly. Well, I was butting heads with one of the members. He left. There was a little bit of tension there. We were going to Eastern Oregon to shoot a music video for one of our upcoming singles, and we were all going to leave together as a group and go camp out for a few days. It was supposed to be really fun. And then I got a response back from Dr. McCullough. This is before he, like, blew up. This would have been, like, 2020. This has been, like, late 2021, something like that. And he said that he was available for an interview right at the same time we were supposed to all leave as a group together. So I messaged them, and I was like, all right, guys, listen, so I'm gonna be there, but I just have to do this interview, but I'll be right behind you. And they, like, had a band meeting and voted me out, and they're like, okay, we don't think you're taking this as seriously as we want to take it. I'm like, all right, fine. I'm cool with all them now. They're great guys, incredible musicians, like, no problem at all. But it was just,
and,
like,
maybe, you know, they saw something. Maybe they saw, maybe they were right. Maybe you were sort of had one foot in, one foot out, something like that.
It's true.
A catastrophe for a
band. It's true.
But you didn't give up music.
No. Definitely didn't give up music. No, so
anyway, but that was the whole thing. Guitar like that.
Dude. Oh, thanks, man. Yeah, no, that's kind of always been my thing. That's always been my thing.
I had no idea. But, I was like, oh my god! Like, at first, I thought that maybe that, like, someone else did the guitar, and maybe you were just kind of, like, singing over it and everything. No, you most definitely.
No, like, that's always been my thing, dude. I can shred a little bit, but that's kind of, like, you know, I came to Nashville, and all that just kind of fell away, and I picked Nashville. And I'm like, it sounded cool, sounded awesome. Ryan was here from T-Lab, and he offered for me to come help him out with projects. I'm like, well, okay, I'm going to Nashville then.
Sure.
Actually, I don't. I left T-Lab back in last December. So I'm actually not with T-Lab anymore, but I have so much love and respect for Ryan and all the work that he does. But, yeah, I just had too much else going on. You know what I mean? And so it was a good problem to have.
It was a good thing.
But, at the same time, you know, so I got out here, and it's kind of a funny story. So I was, I always kind of wanted to record my own music, but I didn't know, I never really used any of the recording software before. I've always heard, like, Pro Tools or, like, all these different, they call them DAWs, digital audio workstations. I heard they're so expensive, like thousands of dollars or whatever. And so I was like, I just got this MacBook for other, because I was done with Windows. I'm like, Windows just sucks for any sort of media production stuff. So I got a MacBook, and I was looking up. I was like, ooh, I heard a GarageBand. I wonder how much GarageBand is. And I kept doing this research online, and I was like, I couldn't get a straight answer from anybody. I'm like, how much is GarageBand? I'm like, can I buy it? And And eventually I realized, oh, it's free. It's just free. It's free on your stupid computer, dude. And so I just downloaded it. Actually, I realized it was already on the computer. I was like, what the hell is this? And so I started tinkering around with it. And I was like, oh, I could totally do this. So I started doing, like, YouTube tutorials. And I figured out how to, like, record it. And I, this is about a year and a half ago. And I just, at first, just started tinkering around. And then I started putting songs together. And then it kind of took on a life of its own. And then I got hooked up with some producers that were like, I was like, oh, damn, these guys know what they're doing. One of them was a guy, my buddy Frank Cavanaugh, right, who's a former bass player from the band Filter,
yep.
Like platinum artist, all this stuff, fascinating guy.
You guys, you and Frank dropped me off at my hotel in
Austin.
That's
right, the American Liberty Awards, yep, exactly. So, so he hooked me up with this other guy, Gino, who's still involved with band Filter, and he's just like a music producer extraordinaire, and he took a few of my songs and just took them to the next level. Nice. I was like, whoa, man. And then I got a couple guys from the Bertaria community. Shout out to Tempo Bear and Crossflow Bear. Crossflow Bear just... His name's Carl Crossflow out of the UK, but man, he took this stuff and like I was like I'm not much of a singer, so he was able to kind of like tweak the vocals and make them sound like listenable at least, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like for me, it's all about guitar, but man, I am so pumped about this. I'm really hoping that your audience goes and checks it out because I then took and so I had the songs and I was like, well, I need like a video. I'm like, so I was like the first single, the We Don't Need You No More song, right? I was like, I need a video for that at least. So that took a lot of effort, and then. This was like maybe about 3 weeks before the album was supposed to drop. I'm like, yeah, I got in the flow of making that video. And then I made the video for the Hood Rat Boogie, which is the song I did with with Hot Piranha. That's an old track we recorded a few years ago. And the cool thing about Hot Piranha is all of us are in recovery. So all of us are multiple years of sobriety, you know. But the Hood Rat Boogie is a hilarious tale of a guy dating a woman who's in her addiction, but the story is like the guy doesn't, he's like kind of a new normie and doesn't really understand like the whole world of addiction, and she's like, he can't understand why he wakes up and every day like his wallet's missing or his car's gone and all this stuff, right. And it's a funny song, it's a really funny, and the video, you guys got to check out the video, it's epic beyond belief. But anyway, so I made those two videos and I was like, I was just in the flow. I was in the flow, and so I made videos for all of the songs. All the songs have videos. And like, nobody's doing that when they're dropping albums. Right. Like, nobody makes like a music video for all the songs. So
no,
but yeah. So we got that. Yeah.
Wait, these days, it's leveled the playing field a little bit. The barriers to entry are extremely low. You can produce your own music yourself. You can video edit. I mean, these were things that were sort of like gatekeeper concepts that record labels always held behind, like, oh, well, you know, you come sign with us and then we'll have you give access to these producers and this and that, and all that stuff is really, you can kind of do it yourself now if you know how it works. So I like that you're able to kind of flip the music industry a little bit, because they've been so disrespectful to artists over the years and have been so predatory in their behavior, that it's nice to see them get the tables turned on them a little bit by independent artists that come out and say, you know, honestly, not only do I not need you to make music in this world, you're actively working against me. Like, I don't want to be involved with a label. And then of course we take that to where 2020 meets, and that is at some point then you have to remain on the label and do the things that they want you to do to stay in their good graces, like ask for proof of vaccination to get into shows and things like that.
Yes.
You know what
Sorry,
I mean?
Dave Grohl. I'm going to need your proof of – well, you guys have to go listen to the song to get that one.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But you know what's funny about that is that, like, I recorded that song about a year ago when, like, all the monkeypox, like, hype was, like, really at its max. Mm-hmm. And the monkeypox thing kind of faded off. You guys, when you listen to the song, you'll get what I'm talking about. And it's like the monkeypox thing kind of faded off, and I was, like, kind of bummed because I'm like, damn, people are not really, it's not as like a salient of an insult, because, you know, that kind of felt, the monkeypox thing fell off. And then, like, the week before the album dropped, it was like full, like, monkeypox was back. Everybody was talking about it. I'm like,
so
yes,
back.
It's perfect. Perfect timing, dude. I'm like, this is great.
I know. I was watching it, and I was thinking, and I just assumed that it was a recent
recording.
No, I recorded that a year ago.
Maybe you were ahead of the curve in terms of you knew that the pox was coming back.
I knew. It was so funny. I was like, yeah, baby. Perfect timing for that monkey pox, dude. So funny. But yeah, I mean, really the whole – and that's the other thing too is like people will be like, oh, now you're coming out with an album, pushing back on the nostalgia. I'm like, bro, if anybody that knows me knows I've been – day one like on this thing, but like, you know, it takes a while to put an album together, you know what I mean? And so
how has it been, what's the environment like in Nashville for it? Because it's known as a music city, but it's also very country, so but it's also kind of got it skews a little bit more conservative, right? You know, whereas so they might be interested in your
total
content. What do you think the Nashville scene looks like for you?
I don't honestly know. Okay, so I had one friend who apparently there's an event coming up and they had a musical act drop out, and so they asked if I would be interested, and so I was like, yeah, of course, and they sent my stuff over to one of the organizers, and the response back was, actually, we're looking for something a little more family friendly. I'm like, I get it. There's some vulgarity in my stuff. It's got a parental advisory sticker, which is another cool thing. I always wanted an album with a parental advisory sticker, so I'm like, yes. So I put that on there, right? And it is. There's some vulgarity, especially that first song, you guys. The first song, it's intense, but then it kind of mellows out after that. It's like an easy ride after that. It's an easy ride. Yeah. But honestly, I'm like not plugged into the music scene at all here in Nashville. Mm-hmm. As far as like I dropped the album last week, and then I went camping for like 5 days, and so like this is like you're the first show I've been on to even like nobody even knows about it. Like nobody even knows about this damn project, and so I'm hoping to get the word out about it. But I don't know. As far as the music scene goes here, I don't really.
Are you into country music at all?
It's not my. Well, okay, I'll put it this way. This is what I tell people. It's like, before I moved here, it never even occurred to me to listen to country music in Oregon. Like, I don't know. Like, country music? I don't know. It never even, the thought never crossed my mind to listen to country music. So, now that I've been here, I'm like, okay, yeah. I got a taste for it. In fact, one of the songs on the album, it's called Cross the Line, has a little bit of country flavor to it. But I can play country songs, you know what I mean? And it's like, I know the style, and I have an appreciation for it. But it is interesting, though. I didn't realize this until I moved here. I was doing some work for a guy, some handyman work for a guy who's, you know, a very wealthy music producer here. He had a bunch of Emmy Awards for, he has this whole cabinet full of Emmy Awards, and it was, like, for Dexter and The Sopranos. Like, he was making music for those shows. Wow. And he had this little studio on his property where, like, songwriters would come and write songs. And so then it was revealed to me that in the country music world, like, none of the artists write their own songs. They have these large, like, these groups of people that sit there in like a circle, and they write the songs for the country singers. And so basically any country song you hear is the product of like three or four guys sitting in a room, like professional songwriters who write the songs, and they like come up with the, because that's the thing about country, is they all kind of have like a, the songs have like a premise and like a punchline. They're all kind of like, you know, tongue in cheek, you know, a lot of that.
There's a formula.
Yeah, there's a bit of a formula to it. And so like people write those songs, and it's whoever can come up with like the most clever, catchiest lyrics gets then promoted, and then it might show up on like a, Morgan Wallen, I guess, is like the big one around here.
Yeah. I'm not a huge country music fan. I had a funny experience in 2002. I went out to lunch with my business partner in Santa Monica, and his friend, this friend girl of his that he'd gone to college with, who I knew really well, and she was bringing her new boyfriend, and she wanted me to meet the new boyfriend, and my partner knew him really well. So anyway, we were having lunch, and the new boyfriend was fantastic. He's just a really nice guy. And I was like, well, so what do you do? And he's like, I'm in the music industry. I go, what do you do? And he goes, I'm a singer. I go, how's it going? He's like, it's going okay. And my partner is just like mortified next to me. Like, he's got his hand over his face. He's like, Brad's won a bunch of Grammys. I'm like, I'm sorry. I'm just not really familiar with who it was. It was Brad Paisley. I had no idea. And I was wondering why everyone in the restaurant was looking at us. But I assumed it was because Kimberly Williams is his wife now, but at the time it was his girlfriend. She's the bride in Father of the Bride. She was According to Jim, and did all that stuff. So I assumed everyone was kind of looking at her, but I'd gone out with them or with her plenty of times where
that was normal. I had no idea. And then I get in my car and I'm like, I call my mom, like, I just had a lunch with this guy named Brad Paisley. And she's like, oh my God, he does this song and that song. And then, and, you know, what's funny is that after that, then now that it's fresh in my mind, then I saw him everywhere.
Of
but,
course.
But up until up to that point, no idea. No clue.
Yeah,
but couldn't have been a nicer guy. I mean, he was absolutely a delight. And they've been together for a long, long time. And my partner's still real good friends with them. And
nice.
Yeah, and Kim Williams is just the sweetest too. We ran a pool table one night in New York at the Hudson Hotel. The two of us knocked out a bunch of Australians all night long playing pool. So we kind of bonded, and I realized that, you know, the country, you know, at that time we're working in the sports industry. We're doing media training for professional athletes, and you know, and there's a, you know, you're not supposed to have favorites, but the hockey guys are the best. Everybody knows that. The hockey guys are the best. And in the music industry, the country guys are kind of the best.
Yeah, you know? That makes sense.
And so we were doing a lot of work with hockey, and we were around all those people. And now, you know, like I noticed that in the music industry, there's just something about, like, guys that – I remember seeing Chris Chelios get interviewed, who was a defenseman who played for, like, 24 years. And they were saying, like, the interviewer was like, so, Chris, why do you suppose it is that there's less, like, you know, overt provocation and, like, you know, chest beating and, like, you know, like, in your face in hockey as opposed to basketball, when, like, guys dunk on each other and just, like, show each other? And he's like, oh, it's real easy. It's because we all have sticks. And I was like, oh, shit. Yeah, I guess there's some some accountability, right? So you can't be a runaway asshole without getting a cross checked in the jaw.
That's kind of what it's like living in the South. Like, everyone has a gun, so it's like everyone's kind of
everybody's got sticks on the ice, and everybody's got guns in the South. and it makes you think twice before you run your mouth, I suppose.
Which is not
a bad thing. I'm not saying allow yourself to be censored, but obviously know your surroundings.
Exactly.
You get a punch in the face.
Exactly. It's like reminds me of that. What is it? It's one of those ladies on the View or whatever, where she's like, "Well, what will the conservatives do when all the black people start carrying guns?" We're like, "That's great, awesome, dude!
That'd be
like,
fantastic.
Fuck, everybody, can we all just carry guns? Like, the more of us that carry guns, like, I'll see a dude at the grocery store with, like, a thing on his hip. Like, I don't care what color you are. I'm like, hell yeah, that's what's up, because I got one in my waistband, and we just all can just get along just fine." It's awesome.
And you know that the thing is, the irony, of course, is that the people that have that in it, and that show that, are the ones that are the most respectful of it, that understand the process behind it, that would never go and be just, you know, waving it around or be reckless.
Exactly.
And, you know, I mean, it's sort of like, it's the right people that have them. Of course, there's a lot of people that shouldn't have guns.
Exactly.
who do. But I think that there's something to be said for that. I used to be a bit anti-gun, not in. I'll tell you why.
Yeah,
my mom and I had been. Someone tried to carjack her, the two of us, when I was 8, and put a gun to her head and said, "Move over or I'll blow your brains out," right in front of me, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she just hit the horn, slammed the door, and just kept hitting the horn, and these guys walked away, and it freaked me the fuck out.
Wow.
And they caught them the next day. And I had to go pick them out of a police lineup, and they were Marines.
What?
They were from the El Toro Marine Base.
Wow.
In Southern California, and they were
Marines,
and they got 5 years for it. But it turned out they had been carjacking people, and what they do is they get in the car with you, put a gun to your head, drive you off into the middle of nowhere, and make you get out and steal your car. But of course, my mom thought that, she said, I had a flash go through my head that, like, a newspaper headline that said they found her dead, naked body in a ravine, and she just said, if I let them in the car, we were dead.
Oh wow! That is crazy. That's a crazy story.
So
yeah, that's wild.
As I, you know, recognize the fact that she's in the next room over dying. right now. You know, it's all come back to me looking back over the last couple of weeks I've been going through this, is that, you know, you start to remember those things, and like, she stood up for me in a big way. I mean, she went mama bear on these fucking guys. And I remember when the press, the media, of course, doing their typical thing, wrote an article about it a couple of days later. They're saying, you know, that these guys like to victimize old women in Cadillacs. And my mom was super offended because she was only 40 at the time. She was like, I'm not old. You know, I was like, well, she's got a good sense of humor about it, because that was the one part she was pissed about, was that she was targeted because they want old women.
That's crazy, man. Like, I mean, that doesn't, they don't fit the profile, that's for sure.
No, they don't fit the profile. And so in my mind, that was my gun association, right?
Sure.
It was pretty chaotic. Looking back on that, you know, truth is, you know, if you're in that situation, probably, you know, it would help to be armed, you know, as well, just as a deterrent. And so I've come around on that. I've come around on my way of thinking on guns over the years, into more of a better to have them and not need them than need them and not have them sort of way of thinking about it. And of course, be respectful of them. I would say treat guns the way you would treat psychedelics, right? Don't play around with them. Don't come into this disrespectfully, or you will be punished. So, there's room for evolution in our thoughts on this stuff, and you don't have to, and people don't have to, you know, their way they feel about guns doesn't necessarily have to be baked in and permanent. There could be some gray area there. It could be like, well, I wish we had guns for some people, but like, do I want mentally ill people having guns? No. Do I want the government to have guns?
I know.
No. I don't want them to have guns either. You know what I mean? Do I want
That's what we say to the government. Like, you put down your guns first, and then we can talk. Like,
exactly. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. As I go through this and write books or whatever and do podcasts, I have to think. I'm forced to think about a lot of stuff that on a day to day basis I never really thought about before, and it kind of forces you to challenge your beliefs a little bit and evolve, you know. And if you're not and it doesn't mean that you're changing your position necessarily, although you could, but it just means like you have more information of which to pull from in order to make a decision. I don't know. I mean, I think that's maybe why we got COVID so right so early, right? Was because we had started before that, and we knew about the pharmaceutical industry in advance of this, right? Just because they're diabolical. But when COVID came around, we didn't have to start from scratch, where it's like, hey, maybe the FDA is not on the up and up. Maybe the CDC isn't really looking out for the best interests of the people. We're like, oh yeah, we know that, and here's 10 different reasons why for each of these. And let me talk to you about the Vaccine Safety Act of 1986. You know what I mean? Like, whereas other people, it was like 2020 freaked them out. 2021, they start to pull out of it. 2022, they finally have the epiphany that they're government is trying to kill them, and now they're kind of waking up. I mean, it feels like there's like a real opportunity for us being like people in the alternative media or the podcasting community to really capture a brand new audience of people that are just starting to figure this stuff out, that are going, I mean, you guys with Unjected, that's like a prime case study, and like, you could take an industry that didn't exist a couple years ago, and next thing you know, it's like super relevant, and people have had a change of mind based on new information over the last couple of years, and they've come around, and they've said, oh, I think the pharmaceutical industry is dangerous. Oh, and by the way, I still want to go dating, but I don't want to date someone who's vaccinated. And then they find Unjected, and oh, shit.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it filled a demand right away, and it's been very popular. Like, you know, we've had a lot of technology issues over the years, but like our Instagram, it's like our ninth Instagram, and it's already at like 53,000 followers again. It's like a huge the community around it is really just like super awesome. But and I say technology issues, but those are going to be a thing of the past, people, because we've been announcing this, but we actually have a cell phone app in development right now. We've been in full app development for the last, like, 3 months, and it's about to drop literally in the next 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks. It's a brand new cell phone app, because I don't know if you guys remember, but we started as a cell phone app, and then there was this big coordinated media smear campaign. They went all the way up to, like, Jimmy Fallon. Jimmy Fallon was talking shit about Unjected, and deleted us out of the Google and the Apple stores, like, on the same day. So they coordinated to delete Unjected out completely, and then we had to pivot over to just being a browser-based, like, Unjected.com. But now we've got a brand new Unjected cell phone app coming. And it's basically like a Tinder clone, so it functions very much like Tinder with the swipe left, swipe right, but it's got all kinds of it's basically like a social media platform where it's got like reels, it's got speed dating, it's got all kinds of really cool features that aren't on any other dating apps. And I'm literally, like, I've been testing it on my phone, and I'm a single guy, I've used like all the dating apps before. Like, I think it's literally, like, the best dating app on the market. Like, Unjected has gone from, like, this, like, known for being buggy and glitchy and, like, you know what I mean, to, I think it's going to be the best dating app on the market. So
that's so wild.
That's where we're at. And so in the next few weeks, you guys, watch, keep an eye out for that.
I got an education on this stuff when I was in Tokyo with those Instagram girls. I was with a bunch of friends, and then these Instagram girls. And they were, and I was like, what is this? And they're like, it's this app. It's like, it was, like, some dating app that's, like, for, like, rich, good-looking people, right?
Oh, wow.
I don't know. And these chicks were on it, right? And I was like, well, let me see it. I'm like, all right. So I'm like sitting on the couch. I'm like, hey, show me all this stuff, right? I feel like such an old guy, dude. You know what I mean? I'm like, show me this dating app there, young whippersnapper. So she's going through all this stuff and showing me, like, location-based. Like as an example, this guy has just sent me a message. It's like Javier, some, like, Guido guy. He's like, I'm in Tokyo for business. I want to coordinate with you, you know, and bang this Instagram chick. Right. Yep. So I was looking at all the technology. I was like, fuck, this has come a long way since Match.com.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Now the apps, I guess it's so you could maybe even have that location component to it too, right? Like, hey, I'm in town, you know, like,
well, I mean, it's
fine being people.
Exactly.
I mean,
that's how it is. It's based on your location setting, and you can determine like what, how far out you want your radius search to be, or you can search by a specific location. Like if you're traveling to, like, let's say I'm going to Denver next week, I can choose my search to be Denver, and I can, like, be like, hey, everybody wants to hang out while I'm in town, you know, that sort of thing.
But, exactly.
But then, like, here in Nashville, it's such a popular, like, tourist destination. It's like, I'll be on a dating app, and I'll start talking with somebody, and they're like, oh, yeah, I'm only here for a couple of days. I'm like, well, that doesn't
thanks for
me.
Nothing. Thanks or maybe. Nothing. Well,
that depends. You know. Yeah, it's frustrating. It happens a lot. So it's a bummer. But anyway, so that's exciting. So Unjected is finally going to be what it's always meant to be, is what I've been saying. I'm very excited about that. So keep an eye out for that, folks. Very soon. So lots of cool stuff going on.
Yeah. Unvaccinated is just the idea of it now is like a – it's, you know, I'm seeing a lot of like purebloods on on Twitter, you know, posting stuff like that. You know, it's like it's a bit of a status symbol or a you know, litmus test, sort of like, hey, I didn't fall for the bullshit. Did you? Yeah. No, you didn't fall for the bullshit. Okay, we're probably going to have more in common just right off the bat than everybody else. I mean, I think that when you realize that there's some components of a partner, it's that you're just going to be incompatible with right off the bat, and you know it. And for me, like my wife isn't into any of this conspiracy stuff at all, and I don't. It's not required, and I don't.
Sure.
I don't bother her with it. Like I said, the only thing I needed to be in alignment was the vaccination side of things with regards to children, and she was on board with it, and we were fine, right? So in a situation where she wouldn't have been on board with that, that would have been a huge problem. So I would know if I were a single guy. I would know right off the bat if I was looking for an actual relationship that person would have to be ideologically aligned with me on the vaccination thing at a bare minimum.
Yep.
And so I would only be on Unjected.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
There wouldn't be another option for me. The other way it would just be like, well, I fucking hope I catch a fish that isn't vaccinated.
Yeah.
But
yeah, it's sad that in this day and age, like, that's really the only thing that, like, that matters. Like, you know what I mean? Like, if you can check that box, like, you automatically check a whole bunch of other boxes for sure. But yeah. Also, you know, yeah, I'd want to have kids. I'm holding out to have kids eventually, you know what I mean? And I would not want to vaccinate them. So that's something, again, I've had situations where I've been talking to somebody, like maybe we've gone out once or twice, and I've learned to kind of put that more up front, be like, you know, what's your view on all this, you know, particularly childhood vaccinations. And like, you know, I had one gal I was talking to a while back, and she was like, you know, sweet gal, awesome, didn't take the COVID shots, and was like, no, I'm not in the COVID shots, but I would 100% vaccinate, like, regular vaccines. I'm like, whoa, you don't know about that? And she's like, I'm not even interested, I don't care what you have to say about it. I'm like, okay, well, this isn't gonna work out, like, just done. So
yeah and I'm sure that it goes the other way as well, right? Yeah. Somebody who's definitely on team vaccine and believes in them isn't going to want to be married to someone who's, you know, and have that fight. And that's separated. That's divided families. Yeah. Obviously, there's been a lot of that. I've seen it myself. I've seen the pushback against that. We took my mother, or my wife took her mom to see Vaxxed in the theater.
There you go. Vax 3 is going to be in theaters here very soon, guys.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah, September. There's you might look. There might be something in your local community there, but there's Vax 3 is coming out. They said September 18th here in Nashville is the screening, and I think that it's a bunch of like private people. It's basically people renting out theaters and doing screenings individually, and so that's my understanding. And so
yeah, Vax 3, I saw it in a theater in Denver.
Vax 3.
Vax, no, just the original Vax. I saw the original one, but I saw it in a theater. Obviously, I've watched it online too. But but you know, the power of propaganda from the pharmaceutical industry is so strong that if you see that movie, you would think that like there's no way you could watch that movie and come out of that not having some questions, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But my mother-in-law, you know, my wife said at the end, like, "Well, what'd you think?" And she just goes, "I don't get it.
I don't get it." Wow. Yeah.
You know, and it's like, well, if you don't get it after that, you're never going to get it.
Exactly.
You don't want to get it.
Exactly.
Have you heard of the decided
movie? Have you heard of Protocol 7?
No.
Have you heard of that one? Okay, well, look into this. This is the new Andrew Wakefield movie.
Oh, great.
And it's like a fictional no. It's a real story, but go watch the trailer, Protocol 7, dude. It is legit. It's like a behind the scenes, like, it's a courtroom drama of like the pharmaceutical industry covering up the research over a vaccine, and then like the intrepid whistleblowers and journalists and lawyers trying to uncover it. And so it's like basically a courtroom drama of like the little man versus big pharma over childhood vaccines. And
it's
so epic. And I'm like, oh my God. Oh my God. Is this finally like bubbling to the surface? Are we finally going to like, and it looks really good. I interviewed a gal last night, Amy Martin from Reform Pharma, reformpharmanow.org. Great, awesome. She works for Children's Health Defense too, and like telling me about how it's a true story, and it's the court case is still going on right now. I'm like, damn, okay, wow. Cool. Yeah.
I just had Adam Schell on. He's the owner of Brain Supreme, which is microdosing mushrooms. And he was he just kept bumping into Andrew Wakefield everywhere. Like in LA, he bumped into him in Austin, and wound up becoming close with him. In fact, his son works with him now.
Cool.
Which is, so there's a lot of people that are sort of connecting through this because of this vaccine situation over the years. Yeah. You know, it was like it was childhood vaccinations. It was SIDS. It was MMR shots. It was the 86 legal situation.
Yep.
It was all of that initially, and but that only affected a segment of the population. And if you weren't a parent, or you weren't into it, or you were busy, you might have missed it. But with COVID, everybody was forced to deal with it. They were forced to look at it. And I think for some people who had questions about some of the inconsistencies, you know, there's only so much you can tell yourself, oh, I must be imagining it, before you go, well, wait, hang on a sec, maybe there's more to this. So it's been interesting to watch people, you know, Andrew Wakefield took a beating, obviously, in the UK, and recently Elle Macpherson came out and announced that she had beat breast cancer from non-traditional ways and did not take chemotherapy. Well, Elle Macpherson and Andrew Wakefield dated for a while. I mean, where do you think she got her ideas on this? And so this is... And the Matrix responded, as the Tates would say, right?
Yeah.
So like all of a sudden there's all these stories about how dangerous this was and everything. It's like, oh, would you have preferred if Elle Macpherson had wound up dead? Would that have made you happy? Because it seems like that's what they wanted. Like, how dare she live? How dare she not take chemotherapy and live? Chemotherapy has a 2.1% survivability rate after 5 years. I mean, you're better off jumping in front of a train. So
It's so shocking. You know, I interviewed, I forgot his name, but he's a professor from Boston College. And he is specializes in this new type of cancer research that he's been working on, where it's basically just two different drugs used in conjunction, where it's basically talks about how he it's really about reducing the glutamine levels. Mm-hmm. And that's like, you know, basically like if you're reducing all the sugar intake. There he is. Dr. Thomas Seyfried, Rebunked, episode 158. He's talking about how the reason why, like, he has proven that this is a viable cancer treatment. Like, just these two drug regimen done in a specific way, along with certain diet, you know, like juicing, fasting, that sort of stuff, will destroy the cancer. But he says they can't get past clinical trials with this, and he's a literal professor at Boston College. Like, he's not, like, canceled or you know, a conspiracy guy at all. Like, he's a tenured professor at Boston College. And he says that they can't get even to the clinical trials because the American Medical Association or whatever regulatory agency tells them that it's unethical for them to do that treatment and have, like, a control group where the people aren't are not subjected to chemo and radiation. Like, they have to – the people that are going through his clinical trials for his drugs also have to go through chemo and radiation, which eliminates your control group. You can't have a control group, so it's unethical for them, according to them, to even – so he can't make his treatment available because they can't get past clinical trials because they're regulated to – all participants in his clinical trial would also have to be radiated and undergo chemotherapy. And it's like
– It's a rigged game.
Yeah, it's a rigged game. It's a total rigged game, and it's just, like, shocking. And so he's like, I don't know. There's just nothing we can do. It's like, what the hell, dude?
You have to go. You wind up setting up shop in Switzerland or someplace, and then they raid your offices there. Yeah, you have to be very careful when you figure out the cure for cancer.
Exactly, and that's a big one. That's dangerous. A big one. Yeah, that's a huge one. It's like you'd think that, like, with all of the ribbons and the runs and all this stuff, like if the people were in pink, like, you think they'd have, like, some progress, but it's like you realize very quickly that that's not the incentive. That's not the goal.
Given all the unusual things that that I've been giving my mother over the last 5 weeks that we've been fighting this, if for some reason she pulls through for this, I'm not telling. I'm going to keep that information very secret.
That's the thing.
Because I'll go to start my car one day and it'll be blown to smithereens.
I mean, I've heard anecdotally, like, I've heard people say that, like, people will cure their cancer, you know, using unconventional methods or what we should say, conventional methods. The chemo is the unconventional method.
Of course it is.
They'll go to their oncologist and be like, hey, I cured my cancer. And they'll tell them how they did it. And they said, get out. We can't treat you anymore. We can't see you. Like, instead of being like, oh, my God, it's a miracle. How did you do it? Like, teach us everything you did. They get angry and say, get out and refuse treatment. It's like,
I've told this story before, but I'll tell it again because it's worth telling with regard to the vaccine doctors.
Yeah.
We were meeting new pediatricians when we had left Vegas and moved to California, and we just randomly went to one that was at the hospital near us, and the guy was like, when we met him the very first time in the little tiny little office, so how are we doing on the vaccinations? I go, well, we're on a delayed schedule, which was code for we're not doing it.
Yeah.
And he goes, what's the matter? You don't trust the government? And I thought he was fucking with me. I started to laugh a little bit, and I go, no. And he goes, well, now I know what I'm working with here. And he wrote something down on his clipboard after saying that. And I kind of like looked over at my wife, and I looked at him, and I just go, this isn't working.
Yeah, I'm out of here.
This isn't working. Thank you for your time. And I was like, not like confrontational, not like I want, not this guy's going to pick up the phone, call somebody. I don't know. I was just like, this isn't working. Goodbye. So we're out of here. And she was like, holy shit. I'm like, did you see how sick all the kids were in his waiting room? They're all sick. Mm-hmm. I felt like I was going to be sick just by walking through it. I was like, ugh, this doesn't look like a healthy place. But anyway, when you go against the standard medical orthodoxy, you get attacked. Whether you're Dr. Andrew Wakefield or you're just some dipshit like me who knows better than to just sign on to this without doing any sort of research. I mean, by that point, that was 2011 that this was going on.
You're way ahead of the curve.
Extremely solid in my understanding of this, and there was a doctor. If any doctor wanted to debate me on it, it was going to end badly for him. So I was prepared, and that is actually something that I kind of had to learn, and I think is maybe a good lesson for everyone. You don't want to get into that discussion with your doctor or a nurse or somebody like that and have half-baked ideas. Yep. You better know your shit.
Yep.
Because otherwise, if they trip you up, they're going to try and make you feel stupid. If you don't understand every single aspect of it, you're not going to, of course. But they'll make you say, oh, well, you don't understand this. Well, then how can you know about X, Y, and Z? You know, they'll use all those arguments. So educate yourself as much as you can. Actually, I'd say just stay away from these doctors and don't argue with them. Just go, okay, we're all good. Yes, thank you. Bye-bye. And just slip out the back door.
I want to give you and your audience a good resource here. So this is there's a website called vaccine.guide. And I learned about this through this chiropractor that I went to, and basically it's just this absolute complete it's like a guide that has all the different categories. Let me see. It's got the VAERS, vaccine schedule, inserts, ingredients, and so it's all these different chapters. But the book, and then you can download a PDF, which is the full guide, and it's like 2,200 pages or something like that. Oof. Now at the, and you can order a or 2,100 pages. You can order a copy of it. I think it's like a couple hundred bucks, and they'll send you like in a big binder this freaking thick. And so my chiropractor's office like literally had a copy of it sitting there like that big. It says vaccine guide on the front. So like any moms out there or anything, like if you're going to your pediatrician, they're giving you any shit, you just walk in there with that and be like, okay, what do you got? And they'll just, you can just open it right to the page. Boom. It's got everything you could ever, it's got every single talking point, every single study, every single anything you could possibly need in relation to childhood vaccines is in it. And just walking in with that binder alone, it's literally like 10 inches thick, walking in and being like, jeez, what do you got?
Yeah.
It's like, that's ammo. Exactly. That's ammo.
Well, for a long, long time, the mainstream media passed off SIDS, sudden infant death syndrome. They said, well, it's just these kids are just up and dying for no reason. Well, you know, what they didn't tell you was that when people tied back the research to what did these kids have, did they have anything in common? Was it some unusual gene? Was it some sort of weird thing? What was it? Well, it was all within 72 hours of their last wellness check at their pediatrician's office where they were vaccinated. So the reason why they were dying was from the vaccines. But you can't say that they're dying from the vaccines, because then the vaccine industry goes out of business, and they specifically bought those fucking politicians in 1986 to make sure that they don't go out of business. So, of course, it's going to be sudden infant death syndrome. But, of course, they rolled that out. And when they started doing sudden adult death syndrome and during COVID, I was like, are you kidding me? I mean, you do realize you're just leaving your fingerprints all over SIDS by trying to pull this, right? Yep. Right? Yep. You understand this, that the mask is off. You're busted for murdering children back in the 70s, 80s, and 90s with this SIDS bullshit. Mm-hmm. And, of course, it's still going on today. But the more you're aware of this, and for new parents out there, I know going through this, when we were going through this process back in 2010, 2011, it's like, if you're expecting to get help from your pediatrician, you are sorely mistaken. They will fight you every way that they can. You will not get any, this will be an adversarial relationship with your pediatrician, unless before you sign up with your pediatrician, you specifically find one who has a different feeling about the vaccine schedule. Because we wound up with one, Scott, who said, I'll write you whatever you want.
Cool.
I'll write you. And we're like, cool. Fantastic.
That's awesome.
But
that's
awesome. Pediatrician also retired like a year after that too. So it's like, well, you got to run that risk, right? And of course you're like, okay, every time I do this, this is some form of fraud, right? Yeah. So I don't know what the legal repercussions are, not that I really care too much, but it'd be just easier if you didn't have to deal with this. But I think awareness goes a long way, right? I mean, like, and there must be a ton of awareness if sites like Unjected are having the sort of success that they have, sure. that means that people are not vaccinated, and they are particular about it. It's not accidental. They're doing it intentionally and want to find like-minded people. So
exactly.
Maybe our kids will grow up in a world where the way vaccines are perceived is much different than the way they've been for our lives.
I hope so too. Well, I mean, we're the only ones reproducing, I would say. No, but it's like,
that's true.
You know,
that's true.
But also,
there is that.
You know, we've had a lot of success. We've had countless like relationships. We get people message us all the time. Hey, we just got married. We met on Unjected, and we've had several recently. Some confirmed Unjected babies. Like
nice.
All glory to God and everything. Nothing to, you know, can't take credit for all of it. But it's a couple that met on Unjected that have gone on to have children, which is just so mind blowing. In fact, I'll just tell you a quick story. So there was a couple that actually about an hour south of me here in Tennessee. They met on Unjected. They got married, and I got invited to the wedding, so I went and represented Unjected at the wedding. My truck, the license plate says Unjected, like that's the official Tennessee plate, says Unjected. So they got to do a photo shoot with the official Unjected mobile, right, in their
that's
wedding
so
outfits. And then just last, let's see, it was July, end of July, they had a little baby. So
no way,
so unbelievable, that's... dude, so unbelievable. Yeah.
Yeah, it's stuff like that. You kind of, you know, you when it happens, then you sort of rewind time and you go, oh, X, Y, and Z had to happen in this particular order in order for this to, you know, and you start to look at that and you go, is this meant to be? Is this? That's where the magic is when you look back at all the steps that had to be taken in order for the current outcome to.
Yeah, there had to be global tyranny on a scale ever seen before,
absolutely,
and just complete totalitarianism, and like this gene altering injection had to be forced on the population for that baby to be conjured into this reality.
Yeah.
So crazy.
Yeah, well, I got, you know, my wife and I had known each other growing up, and we got reconnected when we wound up coming back together, getting married, but that was via Facebook. So I was like, damn, do I have to invite Mark Zuckerberg to the wedding?
Totally. The
at least the gift registry.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Gift registry, Mark. What was the NSA? The NSA, right? NSA LifeLog. Be like, thanks, LifeLog. Thanks, NSA.
Yeah, thanks, LifeLog. thanks to InQtel. I sent a card to them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, I mean, these things have the law of unintended consequences. So now that Unjected is out into the world and in the universe, that it can't help but be a factor in all of these things, right?
Totally.
So there's going to be the whole universe will change now as a result of this being there in some unusual kind of way, and that's kind of interesting and humbling to be a part of, huh?
Totally, man. I mean, it's truly an honor, and like, it's just, I'm like ride or die, whatever it takes. It's been quite a journey. It's been insane to see from the back end. Like, we've had to deal with like obviously censorship, hacking, internal sabotage. Had a developer like take the whole site down and threw a temper tantrum and took the site down.
Fun.
We've had a mainstream media outlet hire an international hacker to illegally breach our site and then write an article about how it was complete like illegal hack, but then they write an article bragging about it, and like Unjected is this. Now we've taken accountability for it, we've plugged those vulnerabilities,
right?
But still, like, it was complete, like they were trying to portray it as like we were just being white hats and doing the right thing to prove. But at the same time, like, you know, there's a protocol for white hat hacking where you, like, get a permission from the company. You know what I mean? It was like, so it was a complete unauthorized access to sensitive data, which is a crime. But then they get to write articles about it and, like, you brag about it. You know what I mean?
Their crime is celebrated.
Yeah, exactly. Because we're Unjected, right? So if they did that to, like, AT&T, like, an unauthorized, like, access, of like they'd be in prison. So anyway, but...
Or some guy would blow up his Winnebago in front of their...
Exactly.
Their office.
Yeah, that was right before I got here. That's so funny.
Yeah,
I don't even know about that one. So,
well, I'll tell you what, man. Of all the people I've met doing this, like, your journey is one of the more fascinating ones, because you have really shown that, like, wherever you are in your addiction, like, that's just where you are there at that moment, right? But that is not where you have to be forever, and that people can get themselves turned around, and you can fuck up and wind up, you know, back on it. But you know, you're a success story, Scott. I mean, you really are. I mean, and you've worked extremely hard to do this. But You're the poster child for people getting cleaned up and following their passion and just saying, like, I'm going to take the hands off the wheel for a little bit and just, universe, you know, you show me. Oh, you're going to get an email out of the blue saying, hey, why don't you come to this city and work for that? Well, what do you know? I was waiting for that email, it turned out, right? So you got to put yourself in a position for good things to happen. And Scott Armstrong, you have done that. You really have done it. I just am. It's so great to hang out with you in person and talk to you here, and I'm excited to see where things go in the future. Plug the record.
Cool. Thanks, Charlie. Yeah, man, and just on that, like I talked about that Hood Rat Boogie song. You guys go watch that. It's hilarious. I do have a public service announcement at the end of it, you know, in recovery. I put myself on blast. I'm making fun of all these tweaker chicks in the video, but then I put myself on blast, so you guys can go check that out. But, yeah, guys, I'm so pumped, so excited about it. Really, like, if nothing else, I just want you to go listen to the music. Like, I don't care if I make a penny off this crap. I just want you to listen to it. And if you like it, share it. If you go to RebunkedRecords.com, I even started a record label, guys. So I'm not done. I ain't messing around. And you guys, by the time you're done listening to the record, you'll be like, oh, he's not messing around. No, we're not messing around. So RebunkedRecords.com, that'll get you links to everything. I want you to go watch the videos. There's a little YouTube button. It's the first time I've used YouTube in like 2 years. So I'm like, I was uploading videos. I'm like, oh my God, I don't even like, this is kind of freaky. But videos for all the songs, RebunkedRecords.com. Go watch the videos on YouTube. Now, there is one unreleased track that's on the album that you can only get it if you get the album at RebunkedRecords.com. You can't get it on iTunes. You can't get it anywhere else. It's a bonus track that you get if you get the album on RebunkedRecords.com. There's shirts. Charlie, you'll like this. So I have a song called Unjected Gal, right? It's a hilarious, mm-hmm. kind of like a 1950s housewife theme. And and the opening line is, she cooks, she cleans, she doesn't take vaccines, right? And so I got some merch for that. So I got a she cooks, she cleans, she doesn't take vaccines shirt. But yeah, go check it out. Just go listen. Go vibe out. There's CDs there if you want to get a CD. But yeah, man, I just want you guys to experience it and share it if you like it. That would make me very happy. So that's it. RebunkedRecords.com.
That's Scott Armstrong, everybody. He's out there doing it. If you want to connect with him, please go to RebunkedRecords.com and support his work or share it with people that you know. If you've got a platform or friends that you think might be interested, go ahead and Scott gives you permission to spam them with his content. And if you want to connect with me, macroaggressions.io is the website, the best place to do that. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you again soon.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
With a $5 meal deal with new McValue, you pick a McDouble or a McChicken, then get a small fry, a small drink, and a four-piece McNuggets. That's a lot of McDonald's for not a lot of money.
Prices and participation may vary. McDouble meal $6 in some markets for a limited time only.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
With a $5 meal deal with new McValue, you pick a McDouble or a McChicken, then get a small fry, a small drink, and a four-piece McNuggets. That's a lot of McDonald's for not a lot of money.
Prices and participation may vary. McDouble meal $6 in some markets for a limited time only.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at kosai.org.